The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, internationals. Three teams through now to the next World Cup, but which big nations are sweating their qualifications? Premier League, Newcastle with the handoff smoothly completed. They have experience of that, of course, the Saudis. And the club flogged, ditto. What will happen for FC controversy on field against Spurs in what they're calling the 300 million squid game? That and your Watfords, your Leicesters, your Brightons and all the other big round eight stories, plus your questions and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. And thank you for joining us on Thursday, October the 14th or thereafter for this show. Not sure who you got on your Totally Today bingo cards, but if the name Duncan Alexander appears, then you can give that one a little tick. Similarly for Dom Fifield.
Morning.
Morning to you both. And also, this is exciting, Michael Cox.
Hi, James.
Hi. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you.
It's been too long. You've been enjoying a little bit of time away, of course, to reflect on your life decisions after your last appearance when you openly mocked football great Zinedine Zidane.
I can't remember that, but it sounds like something I would do. So, yeah.
Did you bring up your Zidane views with Glenn Hoddle, I wonder?
No. Did interview Glenn Hoddle last week, which is on the on the Athletic site now. No, we talked about Johan Cruyff, but not about Zinedine Zidane.
Where do you stand on Cruyff, Michael?
Well, I mean, obviously he was before my time, so I can't really offer any particular judgment. But yeah, I mean, seems to have had as big an impact as almost anyone as a player and a manager.
Okay. It was, by the way, I really enjoyed your piece with Glenn Hoddle and the kind of conversational feel of it all. Unlike your take on Zidane, he was a very essential player and these were the kind of the most essential bits.
Yeah, I'm pleased you say that about the conversation because it's quite funny to interview Glenn Hoddle because he's got a very particular way of speaking and it's quite tricky to make that come out in text and also for it to be readable, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I hope that came across. He does speak in a very certain way.
He certainly does. You also highlighted the Monaco goal. I have to say it was the Watford one for me, Clive, which actually had me, I burst out laughing when I saw it.
Huddle with a beautiful piece of skill. What a magnificent goal by Glenn Hoddle. He deserves those celebrations.
That's the one where he backheels it and then chips it. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, so I guess that's the most famous Hoddle goal. That's certainly the one I've seen the most. Whereas, I'd seen probably none of his Monaco goals, but certainly the last one in there where he beats the same defender three times and then scores from an absolutely crazy angle. I've never seen a goal like that. It's fantastic. Mm. So, yeah, it was fun to talk through that.
I think it's a nice exercise, actually, to take kind of punditry luminaries and actually explore the fact that they previously lit up the screen in other fashions.
Should do it with Tony Hibbert. Famously never scored, so it would be quite a quick exercise. But there'd be probably some good tackles in a Merseyside derby. That the reason that Watford goal is so famous is because it was on legendary VHS 101 Great Goals. So
okay.
I would say I've probably seen that goal more than many other goals. Breaking news for you there.
I did the same with Lineker last year and I showed him a goal that he had no recollection of whatsoever, which I found quite odd because it's, if you type in Gary Lineker goals, it comes up quite quickly. But presumably ex-professionals don't spend their free time going through their own their greatest moments, which I definitely would, I must say.
Right. And me too, had I ever had any greatest moments. But that's one of the things actually about the Glenn Hoddle piece available now on The Athletic, is that how crystal clear his recollections are of these very specific moments from games in the 80s, games in Monaco. I found that quite remarkable.
Yeah, it seems like often with, you know, really top sportsmen, time does seem to slow, doesn't it, when they're doing something great and they do really think through what they're doing at the time. So, yeah.
Has that in common with listening to this podcast? Right, listen. Anyway, that's enough plugging of Michael's, very excellent Glenn Hoddle chat. Or Glenn Hoddle's very excellent chat with Michael, whichever way around you fancy it. Internationals, of course, Dom, that's what you're hungry to talk about. So let's quickly round up how things stand after Monday's and Tuesday's latest round of results. Monday, Germany became the first team to join host Qatar at the 2022 World Cup, winning 4-0 in North Macedonia, including a couple of goals from Timo Werner.
Jetzt kriegt den Ball nicht richtig. Werner mit dem nächsten Mal im Tor! Doppelpack Timo Werner!
Qatar, meanwhile, were busy losing 4-0 to the Republic of Ireland in a friendly in Dublin. Callum Robinson with a hat-trick there. Denmark also sealed their qualification on Tuesday, beating Austria 1-0. The Danes now have won 8 out of 8 and still not a single goal conceded. Scotland won in the Faroe Islands to stay on course for second in that group, but only just. Another late goal for them. This time it was Lyndon Dykes breaking the deadlock in the 86th minute.
Nathan Patterson's cross ball, great ball in, and there is the goal for Lyndon Dykes. That will do nicely.
Close but no cigar for the Faroes. Wales and the Czech Republic remain level in second place in Group E after both won on Monday night. But what's this? The Welsh are effectively guaranteed a playoff place anyway, thanks to their success in the Nations League. Northern Ireland were beaten 2-1 in Bulgaria. Their World Cup hopes officially over now. The hosts starting not one but two sets of twins, the Hristovs and the Sonevs. And England dropped points for just the second time in qualifying with that 1-1 draw against Hungary. Crowd trouble involving the away fans this time at Wembley. On-field, it didn't go much better. England failing to win a home qualifier for the first time in 9 years. Crikey. Well, there you go. Gareth Southgate's side need 4 more points, Dom, from Albania and San Marino in November, so they should be all right. Dom, your take on England?
They will qualify. Those are two kindish fixtures to end the group. But it was a bit of a rude awakening on Tuesday, but sort of back down to earth. A stodgy performance, didn't look themselves. I think maybe the number of changes. I think there are a lot of those attacking players slightly out of form or slightly adjusting at club level to new surroundings. You could put Jack Grealish in there. I think Mason Mount's playing his best football at the moment, and it just felt a bit awkward. I'm not sure Southgate would have made that sort of bold team selection had Calvin Phillips been available to him as well. And England might have actually been slightly more comfortable with Phillips in the starting lineup. But I mean, they'll be fine. They'll qualify. But it just shows that it's a little reminder they're a work in progress still.
The Phil Foden deep line playmaker experiment not so successful against the Magyars.
Yeah, but as a deep line playmaker, you need runners to be running up front, and that was the issue. Sterling and Kane particularly didn't really look in form, as Dom said, and Grealish was taken off first, which I think everyone felt was a bit harsh. But if you look at the most passes by England players in that game, Kyle Walker with 105, John Stones with 97, Tyrone Mings with 78, and Luke Shaw with 68. So the back four basically had the most passes, which is never a good sign for a team that's, you know, attacking on the front foot. And it did feel a bit turgid and a bit disappointing.
One of those games, Michael, or are you left feeling a bit uneasy about England's direction?
It was a poor performance, but I don't think we need to go OTT. I mean, England's record in qualification is pretty good. I think you can apply the same thing to Kane here. He had a poor game, no question, but he'd just completed a run of scoring 14 qualifiers in a row, which is absolutely extraordinary. So I think we can put it down as a bit of an off night. And as Dom says, there's two very winnable games. England only have to get 4 points. I think it's worth pointing out, I mean, we tend to think of all qualifiers as pretty much the same, but actually there's a massive difference now between qualifying for the Euros and qualifying for the World Cup. In the last Euros, there were 24 qualification places available because there were no hosts. And now for the World Cup, there's only 13 places available for UEFA. So it's basically twice as hard to qualify for the World Cup than it is for the Euros. And maybe we've become a little bit blasé about that. Because, I mean, since the failure in 2008, England, I don't think England have even had a scare of not qualifying for a tournament. Maybe I've forgotten one, but you look at the rankings at the moment. I mean, Spain are in a bit of trouble. They need to beat Sweden in their last game to get through. Portugal are only in second. Italy, a joint top, probably will go through. But England have only got one fewer point than Germany, who, just because of how their group has panned out, have already qualified for the tournament. So I think England are doing all right.
Well, as you say, other countries cannot afford to relax at all ahead of November's games. Switzerland's win over Lithuania means they are now level with European champions Italy at the top of their group, but 2 goals behind on goal difference, and they'll face each other for first place in November. Sweden now 2 points ahead of Spain, and they take on Las Rojas in November in another equally huge game. Croatia are going to be taking on Russia in November. That's a pretty much a direct head-to-head as well, as is Netherlands-Norway and Portugal-Serbia. Crikey, Portugal currently a point behind Serbia, despite their 5-0 rout over Luxembourg, which saw Big Ron notching up his 10th hat-trick for Portugal in what is, I'm going to say, a quite extraordinary career. That's good. I mean, whether you like international World Cup qualifying thing football or not, November's game is going to be absolutely huge.
Yep, 25 days until the next international break, and I for one, am counting them down. So,
right. In the meantime, let's take this opportunity to send our best wishes to David Brooks, the Wales and Bournemouth midfielder, who revealed this week he's been diagnosed with cancer. He's about to start treatment for stage 2 Hodgkin lymphoma. He says the prognosis is positive, but really, our very best to him and his family. OK, the Premier League awaits. Top division swinging back into action this weekend with round 8. What does that mean? We'll find out next.
So, Mr. Klopp, what's been troubling you?
Well, it's a very important time of the year, and I'm worried we're not going to be able to get the most out of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of big games coming up.
Games? No, I'm talking about Oktoberfest. Sauerkraut, Steins, Lederhosen, the one time Germany comes to England, yeah.
Sometimes it can seem like they don't know what they're doing, but with Paddy Power, you always know you're getting Das Beste rewards, like money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power!
Pre-match bet builder bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg. Min 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds. Online exclusive T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
All right, before we get on to the Premier League, Duncan, you want to talk about Scotland?
Well, I thought we should mention Scotland, the nation. Local derby with the Faroe Islands.
How far is it? How far is it between the two entities?
I don't know accurately, but I'm going to guess 347 miles.
Okay, producer Charlie's just fact-checking that at the moment. What did you want to say about this game, in which the Faroe Islands were objectively quite unlucky not to take at least a point?
Yeah, I only really tuned in for the last 20 minutes, and it was one-way traffic, like when the Faroes are fishing. But the goal came pretty late. Lyndon Dykes, four consecutive games he scored in now, which is pretty good. But yeah, I mean, obviously, as we've discussed at length, they needed to win these two games, and just about they did it. So they've got a pretty good chance. And yeah, I would like Scotland to be in the next World Cup, so let's hope they make it.
I've just realised, Duncan, you've got quite a Scottish name. Are you a bit Scottish?
Not at all, but people often think I am Scottish, yeah. I'm not sure why apparently my parents chose between Hamish and Duncan for my name. So I don't know why. Maybe. There we go.
Both nice names. All right. Premier League then, round 8. And I'm going to say this is wall-to-wall delights. If you're a fan of appetising storylines, boy, are you going to enjoy this one. There's everything from Newcastle's new owners against Spurs to Watford's new manager, Claudio Ranieri, against Liverpool. You've got Brentford-Chelsea, Man United with no Varane or Maguire at Leicester, the David Moyes derby, Everton-West Ham, and also the least competitive fixture in Premier League history. Which is that one, Duncan?
Well, technically it's Man City-Bournemouth, but that can't happen. So it's Man City-Burnley, yeah.
OK, that caught me a little bit by surprise. Tell us about Man City-Bournemouth then.
Well, they've played each other 10 times in the Premier League, and City have won all 10. So,
right,
but obviously,
okay.
Burnley don't have a great record going to the Etihad.
No. So the last four meetings between these two sides at the Etihad have all finished 5-0 to City. City could become, thus this weekend, the first side in English Football League history to win 5 successive home games by 5 goals or more against the same opponents. Are they going to do it?
They could do. Get Ferran Torres in the team. I mean, obviously, this fixture is also notable for Burnley spoiling it a couple of seasons ago with an aeroplane hire. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But yeah, Burnley, I mean, I know we've talked about this as well recently, that a lot of their numbers this season are pretty bad, and there's been a couple of seasons where they've started slowly but actually looked okay. But I think this season is looking quite troubling for them. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, it would be unusual to lose 5-0 again, but I don't think you can
actually be
out.
Quite usual in this case.
Well, it's never happened before in top flight history, so it's a yin and yang.
It's one of those probability questions, isn't it? Anyway, that's Man City Burnley, and that's 3 o'clock on Saturday, so you can't watch it on TV. What else grabs your attention, though, from the other 9 fixtures available? Dom?
Well, I've got the pleasure of Brentford-Chelsea on Saturday early evening, which I'm really looking forward to, a bit of a West London derby. A couple of things. I mean, Brentford obviously have been a bit of a breath of fresh air. They've really taken to the Premier League fantastically well. Brought a lot of the swagger and style they had in the Championship, and they've just transposed it onto the higher level. But I want to see how Chelsea... I want to see how they've used the international break. I know a lot of their players will have been absent with their countries and playing competitive games, but I think that was an opportunity, a fortnight there for Thomas Tuchel to work on maybe a few tactical tweaks, because things weren't working really in that last period between the international window in September and October. Although Chelsea won a few games quite handsomely, they didn't really play that well. And for a team that's to be top of the table and yet almost playing within themselves, felt a bit of an anomaly. So I'm quite keen to see how he's used this time and whether we'll see anything that's slightly different in terms of the lineup and how they get the best out of Lukaku and the number 10s.
Well, listener Srinath Ravamudan asks, are we going to see a Lukaku-Werner strike partnership regularly this season? Timo Werner with, as I mentioned before, a couple of goals for Germany against North Macedonia, one of which was an absolute belter.
Well, he did well in the previous international window as well, scored goals for Germany and then found himself out of the Chelsea team still when he came back. But just towards the end of the last run of games, Tuchel was showing a bit more faith in him, a bit more. I think it was quite telling that in Turin in the Champions League, when they were chasing a game and they wanted to make clearly quite radical changes, made 5 substitutions in the second half, including 3 in one go, he didn't turn to Werner. Werner stayed on the bench, and I think that was maybe an indication of a slight lack of faith from the management in what he could do. But then, you know, he scored against Villa in the League Cup, he scored against Southampton, and against Southampton he did what he always does. You know, he missed a load of chances, finally put one away. I think he does offer something different to them, and I think there is something in the whole Lukaku-Werner partnership. I mean, when Werner had his successful time at RB Leipzig, it was playing with Poulsen up top as a bigger striker. And I know Lukaku won't do the same job and he'll be more prolific than Poulsen was, but clearly Werner is a player that thrives alongside another forward. So maybe it is something that they need to explore.
Could argue the same thing for Lukaku, given the way things worked at Inter. Not sure if others have strong views on that, or generally how well you see Brentford getting on in this game after beating West Ham last time out and previously drawing with Liverpool. What do you think? How do you think they're going to get on this time, Michael Duncan?
Yeah, I fancy this to be a good game. I just think Brentford's front two are just always causing problems. They're just so dangerous with combination play, with balls in behind. I mean, Chelsea have got a couple of issues at the back. They won't have Thiago Silva there. Not quite sure what they're going to do on the right. Probably Chalobah might continue in that right-sided centre-back position, which would be him up against Tony, which would probably be his biggest test so far, I guess, as a Premier League defender. So, yeah, I mean, I think the last Saturday, was it a late Saturday kickoff that was the Liverpool game, which was probably the best Premier League game I've seen so far this year. So with that and a hint of a derby as well, I mean, geographically very much a derby, but it just feels weird for Brentford and Chelsea to be in the same league. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
It's the first league meeting since 1947, back when Brentford was just a tram stop, probably, in West London. Duncan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, as Don was saying, I think Werner does offer something different. He's a bit like a bay leaf in some respects, in that you don't know. It improves it overall, but might not necessarily get the glory himself. But I think it's quite interesting because...
Do you use bay leaves? I'm going to stop you there. Yeah. What do they do?
Well, they add a little depth of flavour that maybe... You don't eat them, though, do you? You just take them out. But you take Werner out of a tea, maybe. But the point I'm trying to make... The point I'm trying to make is...
Very expensive Bailey.
Yeah. Is that... It's quite interesting, because obviously Werner brought in from the Bundesliga. Tony, one of a series of Brentford strikers, who have come into the Premier League, be that, you know, with other teams like Watkins. And it's actually a bit of a comparison. So I think... You could almost argue that the level of the Championship and Bundesliga, obviously not quite the same, but I think in terms of how a striker can come into the Premier League, there's something there. So I'm quite interested to see, you know, I thought Tony was absolutely brilliant last season in the Championship. It's quite pleasing to see him adapt so well to the Premier League.
Mm. One or two questions over the fitness of Lukaku. We drew from... the Belgian game against the third, fourth playoff, I think, with fatigue. Antonio Rudiger also with back problems. Do you expect major tactical changes from Tuchel, Michael, ahead of the meeting with the Bees?
I don't know. It kind of goes back to what Dom said. I mean, I was at the game against Southampton and saw the lineup and kind of had to read it two or three times to get my head around how many changes there'd been. So many other slightly fringe players coming in. I mean, Hudson-Odoi, didn't expect to see him start, but I thought he was Chelsea's best player in the first half of that game. So maybe he'll start again. But I think it will be an interesting game. I mean, the base system is pretty similar. They usually play a 3 and a 4, Chelsea, and it'll be interesting to see how Brentford do, whether they match him up completely. I don't know, but it should be a fun one, especially with... Maybe Brentford have probably had a few players away as well, but I do think if you're Brentford and you're playing one of the big sides, playing after an international break does give you a little bit of advantage usually. So yeah, I think this is a game of the weekend. I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. Richard Clark, actually, on that note, asks which EPL team has had the fewest players away on international duty this break and will therefore have had sufficient time on the training ground to perfect their tactics for this weekend's fixtures?
Okay. I mean... It's got to be Burnley on the basis that, one, their players are all English, and two, the players aren't good enough to play for England, surely.
Mm. Well, don't forget Austria and Ashley Barnes, but...
that is
but
true.
Yeah, Chris was New Zealand.
That is the most daunting away trip, isn't it, really, in terms of distance?
Well, Liverpool will have had a raft of absences to contend with, some of which may not be available, depending on what quarantine rules have been made up on the day. They are at Watford anyway this weekend, helping a saintly old fellow with a belief in miracles move into the vicarage. A touching story, this one. Claudio Ranieri. It looks like a brutal first fixture for our pal Claudio. But Duncan, the last time they visited Liverpool, you were there and it didn't go their way at all.
Yes, it was the 3-0 game, Saar scoring a couple of goals. And it was strange because Liverpool started really lethargically in that game and never really got going. And as people might remember, it was just a week or so before the lockdown, the first lockdown. Mm. And it did feel like a kind of, shifting of paradigms in a way. And they were so far ahead, they won the league that year. But they didn't look quite as good when they came back. And then last season, they had that spell and they really didn't have any energy, and they played quite, as they had at Watford. And I think the big change this season is Liverpool, they don't look defensively perfect, but they've kind of gone back to the level of pressing and intensity that they had maybe in kind of 2017-18 and possibly the following year when they came close to winning the title. In terms of PPDA, passes per defensive action, so the more defensive actions you do to opposition passes, the lower that number. Liverpool are the lowest this season, and they were nowhere near the lowest last season. So I don't expect a similar game. I think Liverpool will be very much on the front foot, and I think Ranieri will set Watford up, to try and, keep a clean sheet as long as possible. Obviously, famously, he offered Leicester... Didn't he offer Leicester players a pizza if they kept a clean sheet? He's now said...
I think multiple pizzas.
Yeah, not just one pizza. That would be quite cruel, I imagine. But he said that he would go further with Watford and give them a dinner if they keep a clean sheet, which I would posit that in Hertfordshire, a pizza would be seen as dinner. But, Claudio...
Where would it not be seen as dinner?
Well, Rome, clearly, because Claudio said it's differentiated between...
No. In Rome, pizza wouldn't be seen as lunch.
Yeah, no, but my point is that Ranieri has said, I wouldn't just offer them pizza, I'd offer them dinner. So
I see. Okay.
Like a starter as well, you mean?
Yeah, possibly. But yeah, I expect Liverpool to be, obviously if they're missing Alisson and Fabinho, that is a loss. But
yes, that's what we've read is the likely scenario that Alisson and Fabinho, having played for Brazil against Uruguay Thursday night, won't be eligible. But Dom, you think that there's a chance?
Well, there's some talk of a few of the Premier League clubs getting together and hiring a private plane to bring players back from South America. I don't know what that means for bubbles. I think bubbles have gone out the window now. I don't understand bubbles anymore. But presumably that means that there is a chance that these guys get back in time. You know, whether they'll be physically ready to play on Saturday lunchtime is another issue, but I think Liverpool would hope that they would get them back. They're so key, those two, aren't they? Alisson and Fabinho in particular.
Trent may be returning from injury as well. Michael?
I think the interesting thing about this game, or one of the interesting things, is not just that Ranieri's come in, but Watford have made a new defensive signing. They brought in Nicolas Nkoulou, who I probably haven't seen him play much since he was at Marseille, but he was very good at Marseille. And you obviously don't get many signings midway or part the way through the season because the transfer window's closed. You can only sign free agents. This guy left Torino in the summer. And I must say, I mean, some of Watford's defending so far this season, there's been a couple of shocking errors from Sierralta, who I think is out injured anyway for this one. And Truce de Kong has looked really poor at times. So they need to improve their defensive record. And you probably won't see many signings within a season that might really transform how a side plays. So quite interested in that.
It's a hell of a start for Ranieri. The run of games is fairly horrific. In his first eight matches, he's got Liverpool and Everton, then Southampton, but then Arsenal, Man United, Leicester, Chelsea and Manchester City. Good luck, quite frankly. It's not an easy way to come back into English football with his fourth club over it.
Well, we talked about least competitive fixtures in terms of goals. City against Watford is 3.2 per game for City is the least competitive. So, yeah, not easy.
Mm. Mo Salah's got 8 goals in 6 games against Watford in the Premier League. Just saying. Next up, let's hear about some other games and not just in the Premier League.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite according to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. And that's got to be good news for all you Man United fans out there, eh? Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. It's over 18s only. And please, gamble responsibly.
Michael, can we get some news of the Isthmian League? Home, of course, of your beloved Kingstonian.
I mean, two great events in 2 weekends. Kingstonians game was called off 20 minutes before the end of the game because, quote, a puddle was obstructing the linesman, which right. I've never heard before.
Who did the puddle?
Well, I mean, I wasn't there, but from that report, it sounds like the pitch was just about playable, but the sideline, the linesman was not comfortable running along it.
So Potter's Bar were 2-0 up with the Bar Army, I think they're called, celebrating. Yep. But then the game was abandoned and the Potter's Bar manager asked the referee for explanation. I asked for the where, what and why, and he said the linesman feared for his safety because he was having to run through a puddle.
Yeah. So, So that was very dramatic. And then
I have to say, against the backdrop of abuse of officials, you know, we shouldn't kind of chuckle at you know, said linesman. Anyway, sorry, the other.
No, I completely agree with that. But I must say, having attended a few Isthmian games this year, my main conclusion from, I mean, remember this league, basically, there'd only been about 10 league matches over the course of the previous 18 months because everything shut down. And I must say, the fitness levels of the officials, I mean, the players have kept themselves in shape, but presumably linesmen aren't just practicing running up and down in straight lines. And there's a lot of linesmen very much behind play.
But at least they'd float in it, you know, in the puddle.
Maybe. Can test that. And the other great Isthmian event at the weekend was in Bognor's win at Cheshunt, where Bognor player got two yellow cards for time wasting in the same act of coming off as a substitute, which I've never heard of before. Because it's great, because usually they get one yellow card and they think, well, I've got my card, I'm just going to take the mickey here. But apparently the referee followed him to the bench and showed him a second yellow card. And of course, the good thing then is that the substitute wasn't even allowed to come on in his place because the player had been sent off.
Incredible.
Great stuff.
Bognor did hold on for a victory in that game. Mm. That's enough Isthmian League for now. Let's head back to the other end of the pyramid. Premier League, after a tough week of mental gymnastics and water battery on Tyneside, it's tea towels at the ready for Newcastle against Tottenham. This is Sunday at 4:30, and it should be quite an atmosphere.
He's gone.
Okay. And it should be quite an atmosphere. Hey, Dom.
It will be a great atmosphere, yes. I'm not sure there'll be very much change out on the pitch.
Right.
Not least.
Some changes, because there's talk of Callum Wilson, Jonjo Shelvey, yeah. Jamal Lascelles all being potentially back, like new signings, if you will. But I'm just thinking with that charge up St James's Park, with kind of a decade and a bit of anticipation, of repressed hope welling up on all sides, what it could mean for the team.
Well, they'll be well backed. Let's put it like that. It'll be a good noise,
right.
But I'm not. Yeah, I'd still suggest that Callum Wilson's return is a major thing for Newcastle. Okay. That's obvious, and he will score the goals that will keep them in the division if he stays fit and his hamstrings stay healthy.
Okay. Who'll be in the dugout, Tom?
Steve Bruce, by the look of things.
Hmm.
Which I think will. I don't think it'll temper the atmosphere, because, as you say, that they're just celebrating Mike Ashley not being associated with the club anymore. But the fact that Bruce is still there, and this will be his 1,000th game, and you know, which
Steve Bruce 1K.
But I suspect that will, yeah, it will. They won't be able to sort of celebrate properly. I suppose until Steve Bruce has been removed. I think he's too associated with the previous regime.
I remember being at Arsene Wenger's 1,000th game, and they lost 6-1. Was it at Chelsea? 6-0. Chelsea fans singing Arsene Wenger, yeah, "We want you to stay," which was a bit cruel. It's funny, this game, because I remember when Newcastle came into the Premier League in 93-94, their first game was Tottenham at home, and there was a similar sort of fervour. I don't know who this game's Nikos Papavasilou will be, but I mean, it's a strange one. I mean, Steve Bruce going to be the first manager with a 333.333 book-to-game ratio after this match. But it feels quite cruel, because obviously everyone's now openly debating who the next Newcastle manager is going to be. And it must be very odd for a manager to reach such a massive milestone and probably suspect that it could be his last game for a while.
Yeah, it's going to be like he gets to 1,000, then that's it. Kind of like a footballing millennium bug, where just like the fourth figure just doesn't compute.
Yeah, or like a tachometer, and it can't cope with that number, so it ticks back over to zero. So, sorry, Steve. But I do think that the atmosphere and the kind of the slightly unpalatable them against us vibe will create a really good atmosphere. And maybe it's a good time to be playing Spurs. I mean, we talked about Harry Kane earlier, but he's having 1.2 shots from inside the box this season per game, which is way down on what he normally does. I mean, 3.3 in 17-18 when he was probably at his current peak, I guess. And then even last year was 2.4, so it's halved this season. He needs to rediscover that form. And I guess Newcastle are now a team that can, you know, theoretically buy Harry Kane.
Well, indeed. Imagine that an increasing number of clubs could buy Harry Kane. His valuation surely dropping down a little bit, given his form so far this season. No goals so far in the Premier League. Taken off, as you say, by England against Hungary. Matthew Davis asking if Kane is actually the new Shevchenko or Fernando Torres. Goals drying up after a lot of months were spent on a big EPL move, which, of course, in Harry's case, didn't happen. Is it a blip, Michael? You were defending him on his England record. Do you see something a bit more concerning in his Spurs form?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't looked lively at all for Spurs. I mean, there seems to be a physical issue there. And I mean, the interesting thing is, he thinks there was a gentleman's agreement for him to leave in the summer. And whether there was or not an agreement, and whether we think that his career prospects should be dependent on this unspoken or unwritten agreement, you know, he clearly feels wronged by his bosses and therefore isn't turning up every week, so to speak. And I think he's got to the kind of stage where we say, oh, he needs one to go off his backside or whatever, which never happens. It's very difficult to score with your backside. You're better off trying to kick it in. But Newcastle keep on conceding penalties. There's only been 16 penalties in the Premier League this season, and Newcastle conceded 3 of them. So maybe there's a decent chance a penalty comes along.
We should point out EFL legend Danny Bullman did score his first professional goal with his backside. So it does happen occasionally.
Okay. Should we also point out that for all the abuse of Steve Bruce, 1,000 games is a huge number of matches as a manager, no?
It's four figures.
Certainly is. I mean, that's quite a career for somebody who I think virtually no fan base anywhere has any respect for.
Well, the thing that always makes me laugh at Steve Bruce, well, one of the things, is that he's managed Newcastle and Sunderland, he's managed Sheffield Wednesday and Sheffield United, he's managed Aston Villa and Birmingham. He doesn't really mind. He'll just sort of, you know, stroll into any club and take them over for a bit. And he's not a manager that's terrible. You know, he will get you he can get you out of the Championship, he can keep you up in the Premier League, but, you know, obviously the situation at Newcastle never really wasn't ideal, and he got a lot of flack, I guess, in lieu of Ashley sometimes, but he clearly isn't a manager that the new regime are going to want to take them forward. So, yeah, I mean, I think I don't think he'll stop at 1,000 games. I think he'll turn up somewhere else at some point.
I mean, he's got promotion to the Premier League 3 times. I think twice with Birmingham, 1 with Hull. So at a certain level, he has done a very good job. And I think even in general, in terms of keeping teams up, he's done quite well. But certainly, it was odd that he got this job in the first place, considering where he was before in the bottom half of the Championship. And you can't see him sticking around with the type of players they're bringing in.
Who would you appoint at Newcastle?
Keegan.
It's funny because, I mean, when you look at, for example, Manchester City, they kind of ramped it up steadily, didn't they? It seems to be quite rare. I mean, even when Chelsea got...
So they had Sparky Hughes, yeah. Then they went to Sven.
No,
he was before.
Mancini.
He was before.
Mancini. Oh, Mancini, and then... No, hang on, where was... So Sven was before, yeah. Right, okay. Mm. Right, so Hughes, then Mancini, then Pellegrini... Then Pep.
Yeah. It seems rare you get a real superstar in. I mean, even when Chelsea got Mourinho, I know he just won the European Cup, but he hadn't actually proven himself at a big, you know, real massive club like that. So I'm not sure they're going to be getting a real superstar in, but some of the names have been quite interesting. Steven Gerrard, I think, is the most interesting name, whether it will happen. But, I mean, he's done a really good job at Rangers. And it could be interesting.
He could do reverse Dalglish. You could go from Newcastle to Blackburn to Liverpool.
Yeah, well, there is a similarity. I mean, I think it's interesting the way Newcastle fans embraced Rafa Benitez so much when he was there in a short period. it feels like there is some kind of similarity in those clubs in terms of understanding the fan base and that kind of thing. So, yeah, you probably say the same for Rangers as well. Similar kind of stature of historic club. I can imagine Gerrard going in there and being quite successful.
44 Red has a question. Says 44 Red, who do you think will win the Premier League next between Newcastle and Manchester United? Woof, Dom.
United, Newcastle, sorry, Manchester United. but I'm not saying that's going to happen anytime soon.
Okay. Man United this weekend are at Leicester. Ooh, Phil Jones klaxon. They're without Rafael Varane and Harry Maguire. Other defensive options include Lindelof, Bailey and Scott McTominay, who played at centre-half for Scotland against Israel the other day. Oh, Leicester in a rotten run of form. One win in seven games in all competitions. Leicester are the kind of team that Man United do well against. Is that fair?
They do well. Yeah, they do well against Leicester. They have got a good record against Leicester in the last couple of years. I mean, I think the defensive thing is quite interesting because I think Lindelof is a pretty good centre-back. I think when you look at the way Manchester United played against the big sides last year, they had a very good run of keeping clean sheets against them. And against big clubs, you tend to be playing like mobile, intelligent centre-forwards. And Lindelof is really quite good against those centre-forwards. And the games they've got coming up against Leicester, Atalanta, Liverpool, Tottenham, Atalanta again, Man City. Okay, big teams. But I actually think he's more suited to playing against them than he is to playing against like Mikel Antonio or someone like that who's going to kind of physically bully him. I think he's really uncomfortable in those situations. But I don't think it's a bad time for him to get a run of games, to be honest. I think I just think he's quite a good player.
Interesting. Could be up against Jamie Vardy here. Duncan Tom Gayton asks, do you have a revision for your Vardy number of goals prediction?
Yeah, I'm raising it. Like the Bank of England, I raise it, I examine it every month, and if I think it should be raised, I'm raising it from 10 to 11. There may be further alterations during the season, but I mean, I should point out, when I said Vardy would score fewer than 10 goals this season,
right,
loads of people said that's really obvious. He hardly scored any last season from open play. So, you know, people were saying I'd gone too optimistic. But yeah, he is playing pretty well, I say, with gritted teeth.
Okay, Leicester hosting Man United Saturday at 3 o'clock. At the same time, a little bit further south, Norwich will take on Brighton. Norwich still looking for their first win, also still looking for their third goal of the season. They've only had two Premier League goals thus far in seven matches, both scored by Teemu Pukki, who, just let me crowbar this stat in, scored twice on Tuesday against Kazakhstan for Finland, becoming his nation's all-time top scorer, overtaking Jari Litmanen. That's remarkable, isn't it?
That is good. I mean, yeah, especially when you consider that Litmanen's international career was so long. He played in four decades. He played in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s and the 2010s. So to go above someone who was there for that long, yeah, fair play.
What about Norwich-Brighton then? Will Norwich get their first win of the season? And Marco, you were talking about Brighton. You wrote a long piece about them recently about not their XG, but their XGA. And how that's the real key to the difference for them this year.
Yeah, although when you look at those underlying stats, actually, they're basically just playing as well as they were last year and they've got a slightly lucky break here and there. Thought they were fortunate to get a point against Palace. The Leicester game, I think there was a couple of disallowed goals. Yeah, I don't think they've been that much better than last year. The thing that I've been impressed with them about is they lost Ben White. You know, probably the biggest player that they've lost, certainly in terms of transfer fee received. And they just brought back Duffy from loan and he slotted in like he used to play very well for them. I just think it's gone really well, you know. I expected them to maybe get a slightly obscure player from France or Dutch league or something, but they've just gone for someone tried and tested. And he's been excellent, Duffy. He's scored at least one goal. He's been a real threat to set pieces and defensively has looked pretty good as well.
Mm-hmm. Could be a danger at Carrow Road this weekend. Hey, Dom, what about Palace then? You have to wait till Monday night for the Eagles' next fixture, and it's an interesting one, hey? At Arsenal, which means Patrick Vieira back at his old club for the first time as a visiting manager.
Yeah, one of the rarer times that he's been back at all, I think. I don't think he's been a regular back at Arsenal over the over the years. It'll mean a lot to him.
Does he not enjoy very good relations with his former club after his departure?
I think there was an issue where he was quite put out at how little effort Wenger's team just wasn't really interested in getting him around the club, which I think he was a bit put out by.
I think also before that, when he was sold to Juventus, which, you know, it's going to upset anybody, but he previously turned down a move, at least in his version, he turned down a move to Real Madrid because he wanted to stay and finish his career at Arsenal, only to find about a year later that he was heading to Turin.
It was strange, though, wasn't it? Because there was a period for about 4 or 5 years, it seemed, that every summer the big story was the Patrick Vieira leaving Arsenal transfer saga every year. And then I think it got to a point where he actually went, I think I will stay. And then Wenger was like, yeah, no, bye. So yeah, it's not the same as it is when, you know, Henri goes back a lot and Bergkamp goes there, and he hasn't quite got the same cachet, I guess. But I quite like the fact that Arsenal have embraced hybrid working, because they're in the office Monday and Friday next week, because they play Villa on Friday night. So it's just, you know, good.
It feels funny, doesn't it? That, I mean, it's 16 years since Vieira left Arsenal. It still feels like quite a recent, familiar thing. But, I mean, he never played at the Emirates. Well, not as an Arsenal player. I think he maybe went back once with Manchester City. But it's been so long ago. And, of course, it's a clash between two managers who kind of came through the Manchester City managerial development school, for want of a better phrase. So it's quite interesting. Palace are really interesting this year. I mean, in terms of the change in style, and the results haven't quite been there. The only win has been against Tottenham side when all three goals came against 10 men. So they're still really looking to convince in terms of results. But yeah, this game should be quite fun.
All right, with a win, they'll go level with Arsenal. That'd be nice, eh, Dom?
That would be fantastic. They've only ever won once at the Emirates since Arsenal moved there. They are playing well. They're far more aggressive and progressive now, and they'll be more attack-minded going to Arsenal. But yeah, as Michael says, I mean, they've only won one game in 8 matches against Premier League opposition this season, including the League Cup, and it's still very much a work in progress. They're just trying to find the right balance and the right combinations. But look, Michael Olise might get his first start. And he was superb when he came in against Leicester, and I think that will make a big difference. Eberechi Eze's back in training now, so I don't think he'll be on the bench, but I mean he's very close to a return to the setup, and that will make a big difference as well.
All right, Arsenal had that slight uptick in results of late, but against perhaps easier teams, facing a bit of a test Monday night. In terms of emotional returns, though. Hard to look past the game, 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon, Everton taking on West Ham. Let's conclude this part with a few thoughts on the David Moyes derby. Emotional, Duncan?
Yeah, very emotional. I think it's quite interesting, this game, because a lot of people kind of assume that that Moyes is just kind of repeating what he did at Everton at West Ham. But West Ham are playing quite constructive football this season. They've got quite high XG from open play. In terms of sequence, passes per sequence, they're kind of up there with Liverpool and Leicester and Brighton in terms of that. So they're not playing like Moises Everton did. So whereas Rafa Benitez has got Everton playing very much like Moises Everton did, a lot of counter-attacking. So I think it's going to be quite an interesting clash of styles, which you might not expect this game to be.
Yeah, they feel like quite similar managers in a way, I think, Benitez and Moyes. You could probably say their heyday was roughly around the same time. For 2005, that was when Benitez won the European Cup, and of course the year that Moyes actually managed to get Everton to finish ahead of him in the table. Difficult really to judge, I suppose, based upon the Merseyside derbies, which are always quite fierce and frenetic, but always quite entertaining, well, certainly dramatic games between these two managers. So yeah, it's a funny weekend. There's lots of games that are potentially good without there being a real standout super big six game. But I think it's quite a lot of quality across the board in terms of the 10 matches this weekend.
Yeah, I was thinking this a few days ago. As you say, there's no like massive game, but there's also no game where you look at and think, yeah, that's definitely going to be last on match of the day. It's like every single match this weekend has got a bit of a storyline or a bit of a, you know, old manager or old players going back or some sort of other story. So it's a really good set of games to come back to.
All right, I say Norwich Brighton is last on match of the day, Duncan.
Right, but strong competition from Villa Wolves for me, although there is that kind of local derbiness to that fixture.
I'm really enjoying watching Villa. I think they've been another breath of fresh air in it all. It's the attacking play, the three at the back, the options they've got up top. I'm waiting for some of their new signings to properly explode onto the scene, but they look good. And Wolves, in fairness, have, now that Raul Jimenez is scoring again, and Hwang's been a bit of a revelation in the last few weeks, that could be quite a decent game adventure.
Would you say the same about Saints Leeds, just to finish off since we're here?
Again, Leeds will never be last of match of the day because they're brilliant to watch, absolutely brilliant to watch. And with Southampton sort of striving for that first win of the season, that's a bit of intrigue there as well in terms of that match. But Rafinha's just been magnificent. I'd watch him every week. He's just a delight and a real threat. So that will be in itself another great game. I don't know what's going to be like. It's going to have to be Norwich Brighton, isn't it?
Well, we'll see. Just on the subject of Rafinha, only Salah, Mane and Antonio have had more shots than him in the Premier League this season. How many goals has he actually scored, though? Is that a kind of perennial issue with him?
No, he's scored at least two, has he? Maybe three. I mean, he's got a great shot, hasn't he? Like a really whippy first-time shot with his left foot. I think he's brilliant.
Talking of whippy with feet, this will obviously be the first Premier League game James Ward-Prowse has missed for ages.
Ooh.
Since 2018, because obviously he's suspended, but he was on a run, I think it was 100 consecutive Premier League appearances before getting sent off. So at least he kept it round.
Okay, I can confirm that Rafinha has scored a very respectable three goals so far in the Premier League this season, and the potential for more of that kind of thing at St Mary's Saturday afternoon from 3 o'clock. Everton, who we mentioned, are taking on West Ham Sunday at 2, have won their first three games at home this season for the first time ever in the Premier League. They haven't won their first four home fixtures since the start of the 78-79 campaign.
Wow, crikey. That's amazing, that.
Right. Only Burnley have made fewer passes than Everton in the Premier League this season. What does that mean? I don't know.
Well, during that quite long Moyes era, they did always start slowly, didn't they? They had a real thing where they had a bad start to the season and then came on strong after Christmas. So
you'd have thought they'd have done it when they were winning titles in the 80s, though. You'd have thought they'd have started well at Goodison Park.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
All right. Well, as you say, there's a potential for some rich entertainment in all the fixtures this weekend in the Premier League. Very shortly, we'll be getting another question or two and talking about some of the other stuff from midweek. But first, though, it's time for some odds. Carl Monaghan joins producer Charlie.
Yes, hello, listener. What a lovely aperitif the international break was before the return of the Premier League, which begins with Watford up against unbeaten Liverpool on Saturday lunchtime. Carl Monaghan from Paddy Power, will it be a happy return for Ranieri?
Not even the bounce that comes with a new manager can save Watford here, Charlie, and that's because Mo Salah may as well be wearing a red cape and a blue suit at the moment. His run and subsequent finish versus City displayed his superhuman capabilities, and that new and improved contract offer must only be just around the corner for the pool's most valuable asset. And that's not all. Charlie, Salah's goal record against Watford is outrageous, with 8 goals scored in his 6 appearances against them. Mo Salah to score first is 21-10 and will fly off the shelves this weekend. But have a look at Salah to score 2 or more goals at 5-2 if you are looking to cash in on his scorching hot form in front of goal. In terms of the match betting, Charlie, we price Watford up at 8-1. The draw is 4-1. And a Liverpool win is odds on at 3-10. No surprise there. Ranieri may well have to wait for that first win in his new job.
Later in the day, we've got Man City versus Burnley at the Etihad. As we've been discussing, it's always 5-0 to City. Carl, without wishing to be disrespectful to Dyche, what are the odds on another 5-0?
Yeah, Charlie, like you touched upon, Man City's last 4 home games against Burnley in all comps have finished 5-0. And we've priced that scoreline up as a 13-1 shot. In terms of the match betting, Man City are unbackable, Charlie. No surprises. They're 10-1 on. The draw is 8-1, and Burnley are 20-1 for the upset. Sean Dyche's men are stuck in a bit of a rut, Charlie. They are winless in their last 10 league games with 3 draws and 7 defeats. With Newcastle all set to hit the January sales aggressively, Sean Dyche's special survival skills will be well and truly put to the test this season. The Clarets currently are odds on a 4-5 to be relegated, while the newly rich Newcastle are a 13-8 shot to go down. In terms of your weekend, Aka, though, have a look at Man City -2 on the spread at 11-10. And in terms of a goal score, how about Phil Foden? He's looked back in devastating form for club and country, and he's 9-2 to be the first goal scorer.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply, and when that fun stops, stop. Here's Team Maya, not the much-missed Brazilian recording artist, I think. But anyway, he says, please give a mention to Canada. Could qualify for the World Cup for the first time in decades. Incredible performance last night. Yeah, 4-1 win for the Canucks. And they are now, looking at my table, third in the group behind Mexico and USA. Only a point behind their arch rivals from the other side of that border. Crikey.
Mm-hmm. They're the three countries that will host the next World Cup after the next one, aren't they? So
brilliant. Canada tick. Women's Champions League was taking place midweek. Chelsea took on Juventus, beat them 2-1. Curiously, that was the only one of the four games on Wednesday that didn't end 5-0. I know, Michael, you enjoyed the previous game for Chelsea in the Women's Champions League against Wolfsburg, that 3-3. You called it a 10 out of 10, as I recall.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Really, really good game. Chelsea just dominated it, but also managed to concede three absolutely ridiculous goals, where I think a Chelsea player would have got the assist for all three Wolfsburg goals, if that makes sense. It was a very, very good game. But this is the first time they've had a group stage in the Champions League, and it's been really exciting. It feels a little bit like the old school Champions League, because there's only, four groups of four, and it feels like the quality, having 3-5-0s isn't particularly great, but it feels like you do get more matches between the bigger sides. And Chelsea's group is really interesting. Them, Wolfsburg and Juventus all going for it. So big win for Chelsea last night. Pernille Harder got the winner. So she's gone up in my estimations, having previously been quite low, because I cycled past her last week. We were both on bikes. And I said, I said hi, and she didn't acknowledge me. So
maybe she was out of breath. Are you cycling past her suggests that fitness is a...
No. So we were going opposite directions.
Oh,
we're passing
I see.
One another.
So the window of opportunity for her to respond to this random person. Do you know her? Have you spoken to her before?
No. Okay. But if I see any footballer going past, I would say
on
hi
a bicycle.
To him. I did the same to Wimbledon right back last year. I've forgotten his name. Because I saw him twice in a row, and I saw him in his Wimbledon tracksuit with the squad number on. So I looked up who he was, and then I saw him again. And I said, all right, Luke, or whatever his name was. And he said,
hello. What did he do?
He just said, hello.
Was he cycling? Was he walking?
No, he was jogging. This was first lockdown.
You were on foot as well?
No, I was cycling at that point as well.
Right.
But if I see any football-related person and I cycle past them, I will say hello.
Which footballer have you bumped into, coincidentally, Dom or Duncan? I've got a couple, actually. I'm quite excited to reveal.
Not at a stadium.
Out
of context
IRL.
Footballers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bumped into Wayne Hennessy in the checkout queue at Morrison's.
All right. Was he trying to attract someone's attention? All right.
He kept dropping all his groceries.
Well, I think I've mentioned this story before, but when I was a kid, a Wickham player tried to sell me and my mum some fish. He was going door to door selling fish, and And I didn't live that near Wickham. I think he'd gone out of the Wickham area to further north, to Northamptonshire, so he didn't get recognised. And I recognised him, and he looked really, really annoyed and angry. And I didn't have the jurisdiction to buy fish because I was a child. But I quickly
Are you sure
ran.
It was him, Duncan? Did you say,
it,
are
100%
you?
100% him. I was like, are you Dennis Green, the Wickham striker? And he said, yes. Do you want to buy fish or not? And I said no. But then I panicked and asked my mum. She's like, "Yeah, we can buy some fish if it helps." So I ran around the streets looking for him. I never saw him again. I did see him again playing for Wickham, but I didn't see him selling fish again. It's always haunted me a little bit.
I always think because I have a bloke that comes up our road probably every 2 months selling fresh fish. And it seems like quite time consuming to knock on everyone's door, ask, and then go and get the fish if needed. Whereas in the summer, when the ice cream van comes, he just puts on the tune and everyone comes coming. Are only ice cream vans allowed to play a specific jingle to alert?
No, but it does raise the question, which noise would you have a fish van? What song would they play, Michael, to attract the fish-loving folk to their wares? A shanty, perhaps, as has been popular of late.
Yeah, that would work. But if he just parked in the middle of the road, turned that on, anyone who wanted fish could come out. Yeah. Save him a lot
Absolutely.
Of time.
I agree. It makes
they
a lot of sense.
They could go down the rag and bone method. You know, the rag and bone man just get shout, like that. Like, get your fish.
If you are an itinerant fishmonger, then take Michael's idea on board, because I think it's a winner. Duncan, your story
having thought about it, that would be quite irritating now. I've decided I don't want a van midway up my road playing fish songs. So,
it could be a song by Fish of Marillion, you know, like Kaylee, for example. I'd like that. Never get tired of hearing that one randomly in the middle of the day.
I once bumped into Kevin Keegan at the checkout in B&Q in Altrincham when he was manager of Manchester City, and he was buying planks.
It writes itself. Crikey. Okay, I have Hidetoshi Nakata and Tony DiRigo and also Joe Cole, bizarrely, in Knightsbridge once, but none of them come anywhere close to Wickham striker selling fish, so I think we'll just leave them there.
What was Nakata doing?
He was trying on clothes in a menswear shop.
That sounds about
right. As was I, actually, and I was really surprised when he drew back the curtain and revealed that it was star of Perugia and Roma, Hidetoshi Nakata, and of course Japan. What a player. Oh, on the subject of, you know, players of that era, here's a tweet from Graham Pascoe, who says, can you give a shout out to Antonio Di Natale on his birthday yesterday, who I share it with? Oh, happy birthday, Graham. A best forward asks Graham to never have played for one of the Seven Sisters. I bet you're a huge Di Natale fan, Michael.
Yeah, he was a brilliant player. A brilliant player. And I loved how he changed his game. He only really became prolific. I mean, that level of prolific relatively late in his career. It's a good question, but I do think a slight excuse for that listener to be wished happy birthday. But I do hope he does have a happy birthday.
Or did. And is that also quite a good excuse for me saying that if you'd like a further exploration of the extraordinary career of Toto Di Natale, goal scorer, cafe magnate, then you can find a Golazzo, I think from some time ago. I mean, if you look on your podcast provider and you search Golazzo episodes, there's one definitely all about Di Natale in there, and with myself and Gab Marcotti and James Horncastle. So, yeah, next time you have a quiet hour, that's there for you. Also available, quickly to mention, the Offside Rule podcast out today. And, of course, that's all over the midweek Champions League action. And the Totally Football League show is out this Thursday as well, looking ahead to the return of the Championship this weekend, which includes the South Wales Derby, Swansea-Cardiff. By the way, listener, if you answered 200 miles for the distance between the Faroe Islands and Scotland, you are absolutely correct. Duncan, you were some way off.
I would say my guess was reasonable. And also, I didn't say I was going in a straight line. I'm on a Faroes fishing vessel that's having to do a few stops on the way.
Doing some of that one-way fishing that Dom mentioned.
Yeah, so...
Also, if you're interested, Chris Wood has been in Bahrain and Curaçao, which is two quite big trips.
They are big trips. Quite nice ones as well. Mm. Very good. All right, then. Well, lovely to have you with us today, Michael and Dominic and Duncan and producer Charlie and you, listener. Don't need to tell you your name. We will return on Monday morning with our reaction to all of that stuff, etc. and so on. For now, though, very warm and heartfelt. Have a great weekend to you all. And from all of us here, goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.